It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care, or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour, plus access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's-level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code PODCAST20 for 20% off your initial Care.com subscription. That's PODCAST20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, into the flood maw, Sachs. We've had a week and a half off because we recorded some episodes over the holidays. I feel rusty coming back. How about you? Are you locked in, ready to go?
I've got the Sunday scaries a little bit today, Ben. I don't know if that's a phrase you're
familiar with. Catherine introduced me to that phrase, and I was like, oh, I do feel that on Sundays sometimes.
And usually Sunday is a day of joy because we're podcasting, and obviously I'm very excited to be doing that today. But you're right. I think there's two things happening. One is I'm feeling a bit of a rustiness, as you're saying, but also I'm feeling a little bit of like, usually our consistent release schedule is a boon, is a benefit. And this one time I feel like we're getting bit by Watsy a little bit, because it's like we got cube updates on Tuesday, but we don't know what they are yet. We've got Lorwyn previews coming, but it's a condensed preview cycle this time, so we don't have many previews to discuss. So normally this would be our previews episode, but we're sort of left in the lurch a little bit. I think that's mostly what I'm feeling. But I'm excited to chat some magic.
Absolutely.
With you.
We've got magic resolutions on tap. I've jotted some down. You've got much more well thought out ones than I do, but I was just thinking, if I wanted to get better at magic, what would I do? And I've got that list for you.
I like the sentiment that you're like, if I wanted to get better at magic, what would I do? That's not to say that I want to get better at magic or will be doing any of those things. But if I were, that's a fun thought exercise.
That's where I'm at. I am comfortable with the level of good that I'm at magic. And realistically, I will not be getting better at magic this school year. There's a lot of new going on in my life this year.
So yeah, we have, I think that's the main drag for this. We'll call it a holiday grab bag episode, as we're going to be checking in on some limited resolutions for 2026. We are going to check in on Lorwyn mechanics and whatever the handful of cards that have been previewed so far. There's like, whatever, two commons and one uncommon and some rares. If we have time, if we need to, we'll check in on a Vintage Cube draft log. I am curious, what has been occupying your magical endeavors over the past week and a half? I've been getting lots of wedding, you know, you said you were going to make good on this. You were going to do like wedding planning. You had to do some checklists to take care of. And I definitely think you did that. Was there any time for some drafting in the mix over the past couple weeks?
I did some Final Fantasy drafts. I did not do any Avatar drafts. I did a Midnight Hunt draft. Took me back down memory lane. That was very nice. I still have the same Vintage Cube draft dangling, where I had Breach combo. I've played one more game of that, so I'm now 1-1 with my Vintage Cube Breach combo deck. So that's where I'm at. How about you?
Well, as we'll get into a little later, I have been taking the hiatus from Limited, or the, as you said, the need. I feel like I don't have the need when we're on these hiatuses from the podcast to play Limited, but I do have the need to get in touch with what's going on in Standard. So we'll have some constructed mumblings a little later on in the episode. But that, I would say, is the primary way that I've been playing Magic over the past couple weeks, is just checking in on Standard and what's going on there. It's actually a really sweet format that I'm excited to share with our listeners, and Ben can go and get a coffee or use the bathroom while I'm talking about Constructed.
Well, I do have a question. I am interested in specifically Into the Flood Maw from Constructed, because I've seen DeFore sing this card's praises as nigh unbeatable every time he draws it and casts it. But I've seen others scuttle on the... I'm weirdly plugged into Magic Constructed just from Twitter. And I've seen a lot of others scuttle about, well, it's not, it doesn't pull all its weight, blah, blah, blah. Where are you at on Into the Flood Maw? Are you a Into the Flood Maw truther, or are you a denier?
I'm currently a big Into the Flood Maw truther, as maybe we'll get to a little later. This is the single blue bounce spell from Bloomburrow, for folks who don't remember. And it's interesting in conversation with Boomerang Basics, which was like, is a lesson, and Is It Lessons was the big deck coming out of Worlds. And I think is now really not, like, it was the air quotes deck to beat, and like has been beaten, I think. Like, it's a good deck, don't get me wrong. It's still like, it plays a role, but it's not like putting up numbers like you would think from it dominating worlds. And so Boomerang Basics is the bounce spell of choice in that deck, obviously because it's a lesson, but also because the real combo is to bounce your Storm Chaser's talent back to your hand, draw a card, replay talent, trigger your prowess stuff, etc. Into the Flood Maw is much, much better against like opposing things. Like if people are trying to do, you know, play an Ouroboroid and then you bounce that before you get the trigger, that's a pretty huge tempo swing. But the huge thing is there's been this like big influx of all of these landfall green decks.
That was where you lost me. I saw meta change green-based landfall decks, and I was like, nah, I'm out.
It started with Selesnya, and now it's more. There's like tons of versions. There's a Golgari one. There's a Simic one. There's a Teemer one. And the thing about Into the Flood Maw in that sort of metagame is that you get to bounce Earthbent lands. Like in the world of Badgermole Cub, when your opponent animates the land and then you go, you know, we're back in whatever Chandelar days where you could boomerang your opponent's land on turn two.
Chandelar.
You know, so you get to you just get to bounce there. Now we got him back.
I'm all in. What a game.
So yeah, anyway, so that so I am also definitely a big Into the Flood Maw truther at the moment. But yeah, Standard's fun, and I've been vintage cubing a decent-ish amount, but not as much as I've been playing Standard.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. In 2026, rather than chasing a new you, how can you let go of what's weighing you down instead? This year, feel lighter.
This weekend, we went to a museum, and once we got inside, Jen said, "Where's my phone?" And I was finally able to put towards something that happens to me in moments like that, which is that I suddenly feel responsible. Like, do I need to call her phone? Do I need to go back to the car to look for it? And obviously the answer is no, but I have that impulse to take on the problem as my own. And I am really hoping in 2026 to lighten the load of that reaction.
I had a very similar thing happen with Catherine and I did put it into words, and I was like, look, I feel like I need to help you with this and I can't, which is very frustrating for me. So I'm just going to tell you that I am verbally tapping out right now. And if you need assistance, glad to help. But you have to tell me specifically how I can help you.
Yeah, especially because it comes as a question of like, where's my phone? I'm like, I don't know. But now I feel like I need to know.
This new year is an opportunity, but you don't need to be a new person. We all have things that weigh us down. Signing up for therapy with BetterHelp can shine a light on what's been heavy and illuminate all the possibilities for the year ahead. It's a small act of courage that can yield big results. It's one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally.
You can't step into a lighter version of yourself without leaving behind what's been weighing you down. Therapy can help you clear space. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/lords.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
So let's get to our show notes here. We'll first check in on the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but we're ringing in a new year, and we would love to ring in some new patrons as well if you want to check out what we have via the Patreon in terms of perks. One is access to our Discord, which is just an amazing community of like-minded, limited individuals. I'm excited. I've put together just a small but mighty testing team for the Arena Championships coming up. Some folks that I had tested with for Arena Champs 5, but I've also got one of our Discord members is also qualified, and so he's in there as well, which is very cool. Just cool to get to connect to people in that way, or connect with people in that way, rather. Just the Discord is awesome, and I'm sure once Lorwyn previews ramp up and we're doing practice drafts and tier lists and all that stuff, it's just going to be hopping and popping as it usually is. And the other perk we want to shout out is access to our podcast feed, which gets you this episode a day early ad-free, and also access to our bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please head on over to the Patreon page. We want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Brend the Bean, Bryce, Jacob, Ryan, Michael, and Skylar. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Those people know what's up. They're getting in that MTG gym membership starting off the new year, right?
That's right.
And you should be too. Cannot say thank you enough, truly.
There you go. I don't know if you saw this, Ben, but the color green reached out to us after our best worst episode, and it felt snubbed that we didn't really award any green cards as the best, or any green archetypes as the best from 2025. And to that, I say better luck this year.
Yeah, I would say hashtag get good. As I tell my students, if they want to play first part, if they want to solo and they don't get it, and they're like, Mr. Warning, and they're griping, like, the best people are going to be, like, we're putting the best people in the places for the band to be the most successful. If you want it, practice more, get better. That's what I have to say to Green.
Yeah, if you want to be something that when Ben and I are in the trenches of December, scrolling through 17 Lands and Scryfall and looking at all the cards, if you want to spark joy, do it. Spark joy. Be better. That's what I say. All right, let's get to some Lorwyn eclipsed mechanics.
Outraged.
What?
I'm just ready. For the Sith Lord, let the hate flow through you.
Okay, let's talk about Lorwyn mechanics. Now, you and I don't really have, this is both, OG Lorwyn is a blind spot for both of our magic histories, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited to dive in. I've done, like, you know, flashback drafts, but as, you know, sort of someone who has no idea what they're doing. So I'm excited to get a fresh shot at...
And what seems like a fairly beloved magic set from the first time it was around.
Yes, for sure.
All right, that takes us up to some Lorwyn eclipsed mechanics. We're going to kick things off with Blight. So when you Blight X, you put X -1/-1 counters on a creature you control. It typically seems like it's a drawback to power down cards, but I think I saw a Blight card where you could put the -1/-1 counters on an opponent's creature as well. So it might just be a shortcut for putting X -1/-1 counters on something.
Maybe it's like a... So that seems like it's sort of a gift from Bloomburrow kind of variant where it's like, if you want to do this thing, you have to have a drawback in some way, whether that's a drawback for your own creatures or if you want a bonus, then, you know, whatever. So the example card we have is one of the aforementioned uncommons, Dose of Dawnglow. It's 4 and a black for an instant. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then if it isn't your main phase, Blight 2. Put 2 -1/-1 counters on a creature you control. So in theory, not in theory, in practice, in actuality, you could put these counters on the creature that you return, correct?
You could. Yeah, because of it resolves in the order on the card, right? Like return the thing, and then you Blight 2. But I think oftentimes the best use of this card is going to be returning the thing, like return some large monster, put 2 -1/-1 counters on your 1/3 that you use to help you stay alive early that isn't a relevant game piece anymore, and then eat your opponent's creature in combat or whatever, you know?
Yeah, so like, I'm trying to think of equivalents to this, because we see 5-mana versions of this effect a lot, like their whatever Zombify, Rise from the Grave.
But not an instant speed, yeah. I mean, instant speed's super broken, but this seems like... The cards in HOU.
Back for more?
Yeah, no. Like the cycle from HOU where you could like put, they came in with a -1/-1 counter that either had to go on them or you could spread it around. Those cards were juiced. Like it was like a 4 mana 5/4 that was really a 4 mana 4/3. But if you could put the -1/-1 counter on a less relevant game piece, like 4 mana 5/4 was really above rate. You know what I mean?
And if there's ways for you to blink creatures, like if you can dump those two
counters, or maybe you get bonuses for counters being on your creatures even though they're -1/-1 counters.
So thinking this is supported, do you think this is like, I'm pretty skeptical of an effect like this, of a card like this. Like this card doesn't seem like it'll be in the B range to me.
It depends on how supported it is.
This seems like it'll be like a C. Great.
I mean, if there are large monsters, if there are things like you're also going to have evoke. Well, you're going to have evoke for some monster that you can evoke, get the effect, it bends itself, and then you can reanimate it. I think in a set with evoke, this seems pretty good. Like we're going to see a cycle of mythic rares like Deceit and whatever that evoke themselves that are pretty busted. I don't know. It's certainly probably not going to crack B-, but I have high hopes for this card.
Maybe. I don't know. I hadn't considered it with evoke. That's a good shout. And we should jump to, for folks who don't know what the mechanic evoke is, we should jump to what that is next, which is a keyword that lets you cast a creature for a cheaper alternative cost. But if you do, you must immediately sacrifice it upon ETB. So for folks who are newer to the game, you probably played Edge of Eternities where there was Warp, and Warp was an alternate cost. You didn't sacrifice the creature. It stuck around for a turn and then it went to exile. Convoke happens, comes into play. Or evoke happens, it comes into play, you immediately sacrifice it with the trigger, whatever ETB trigger it has on the stack.
So we've got, I guess Deceit doesn't work well with that graveyard thing, but so we've got Deceit here, which is a mythic rare, 4 Dimir for a 5/5 elemental incarnation. When this creature enters, if blue-blue was spent to cast it, return up to one other target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. When it enters, if black-black was spent to cast it, target opponent reveals their hand, you choose a non-land card from it, that player discards that card, and it's got evoke for Dimir. So it can either be a bounce or thoughtsies, or both if you don't evoke it.
Correct. Well, but it's also pretty awkward because if you evoke it for blue-black, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's true.
And it looks like that whole cycle of mythics is going to be the same. We have emptiness is also spoiled, which is four Orzhov-Orzhov hybrid for a 3/5 with evoke for Orzhov-Orzhov. And if you do white-white to cast it, you return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Or if black-black, you put 3 -1/-1 counters on up to one target creature.
I like these. They're a clean design. It's very color pie-centric for what the effects you get are, for the mana spent to put into it. Those seem cool.
And Lorwyn was hybrid mana, and there were mono-colored decks, I would assume. Like, do you think we'll see some mono-colored stuff happening with hybrid mana?
I hope so. I really enjoyed that part of Avatar: The Last Airbender. We've got more returning mechanics. First up is Convoke. Second up is Convoke. Your creatures can help cast Convoke spells. So each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for one generic mana or one mana of the chosen creature's color. So if there's blue in the casting cost and you tap a blue creature, that can help fulfill the blue mana symbol when you Convoke. So the card we've got here is an absolute banger. There is one common, but it hits hard. So this is...
Top common alert.
This is gross. So the card is Unexpected Assistance. When I first opened up the previews on Scryfall, it was sorted commons to rares. You know, I sorted by rarity. And this was the first common I read, and my jaw was on the floor, and I was salivating. And then I was the only common, and I was left wanting so much more. But so this is Unexpected Assistance. 3 blue-blue for a common. It's an instant. Has Convoke. You draw 3 cards, then discard a card. And this very easily could be a sorcery and would be terrible and would be a throwaway. This being...
Waterbending lesson begs to differ.
Sure. You're right. But
that's what I feel like I would have classically underrated this card if not coming off the heels of Avatar and how much I was obsessed with Waterbending Lesson.
It's so much better than that. It's juiced way more than that, being an instant, because your cards can play defense, block, tap to Convoke, refuel. This card is nuts.
Yeah. If your opponent is like tapped out or close to tapped out, and you pass back to them, and end of your turn, they cast Unexpected Assistance. Scoop. Like, just scoop them up.
Yeah, this is actor fiction, end of turn, you lose. We need some other acronym for Unexpected Assistance.
Changeling is back, which is a creature type that gives the card every creature type. So, for example, we have Mutable Explorer. It's 2 and a green for a 1/1 creature shapeshifter that has Changeling. And when it enters, you create a tapped Mutavault token, which is a land that has tap for colorless and an activation of 1. This becomes a 2/2 creature with all creature types until end of turn.
I mean, this card implies a couple things. The Changeling thing coming back is cool. And I assume there will be typal matters now.
Typal matters in
Lorwyn. And when this... It also brings about like the concept of land tokens or just tokens of other Magic the Gathering cards coming into the game, which I'm here for. Like, I think probably more off-putting to somebody who's never played with a Mutavault before, but like, I instantly know what a Mutavault is. Like, that's cool to me. Or if something said, when this creature enters, create a Grizzly Bear token or a Llanowar Elf token or a like classic Magic cards. And I think certainly that's going to play well in the digital space, but they're printing all these different tokens anyways. What difference does it make to them if they're printing a Mutavault token?
I was going to say, I feel like this is the kind of card where when they introduced alchemy, they would have been like, and this is an alchemy card. And now they're just like, nah, we can actually just do this in regular Magic anyway. I'm here for Mutable Explorer. And the last returning mechanic, which like at this point, is this a returning mechanic? This just feels like...
No, it just feels evergreen, yeah.
When was the last set that didn't have double-faced cards? Maybe not all of them, but most sets seem to have double-faced cards. So we have double-faced cards coming back this time around. Let's do some example cards. We've got Sig... Wanderwine Wisdom, 1 and a blue for a 2/2 that can't be blocked. It's a legendary merfolk wizard. Whenever this creature enters or transforms into Sig or Wanderwine Wisdom, target creature gains whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, draw a card until end of turn. So it gains that until end of turn. And at the beginning of your first main phase, you can pay white. If you do, you transform Sig, and it's a 2/2 that can't be blocked. The back is Wanderbrine Shield. And when it transforms into this, target creature you control gains protection from each color until your next turn. and it can swap back again in your first main phase for a single blue.
Yes, there's a whole cycle of these that supposedly the flavor is Lorwyn has been eclipsed now, and as you're going through the different phases, like the creatures are following the
I see
the eclipse cycle.
Good for you. Good for you for doing the Vorthos yeah. research for
absolutely.
The pod.
I gotta give the people what they want. Our audience is very into that information. It's crucial for the episode to happen. But my question is, how good is this card? I mean, it's certainly good.
It's like a B. 2-mana 2/2 unblockable with.
But it also gets snapped off yeah. pretty. I mean, it's a great 2-drop. Don't get me wrong. But it's not like premium or anything like that.
I don't know. You have to use letter grades. You're just using you're
premium.
Saying,
premium.
It's not that good, but it's good, right? I feel like we're in the. It's good. It's a C+. It's bad. It's a C+ territory. I think this is. I would give this a B or a B+.
B or a B+ because it can't be blocked on either side. 2-mana 2/2 can't be blocked. Every yeah. other turn you draw a card, but you have to pay.
You have to answer this.
But until you put more mana into it, it's a 2-mana 2/2 unblockable. How good is that? What would you give that?
B-. A B-. Is that not? Yeah, that seems great. What would you give a 2-mana 2/2 flyer? I know this can't block flyers. It's good. It's a C+. Yeah, I would give this. I would rate this higher.
And then with the ability, you're private. It's a B.
B, I think.
Yeah. There's a whole cycle of those. I don't think they are confusing to read online, and I don't think necessarily worth going through more of them, but that is a thing.
We've got other commons, uncommons, cool rares to check out. One other uncommon is Perfect Intimidation. It's 3 and a black for a sorcery at uncommon. Choose one or both. Target opponent exiles 2 cards from their hand or remove all counters from target creature.
Which is interesting. I mean, if there's a card like Dreadnought that is a 15-15 that blights itself 13 or whatever, you know, and then you can wombo combo with Perfect Intimidation, that would be pretty sick.
Exile is also interesting. Maybe they just wanted to juice the... Like that, you're like, well, you're paying 4 mana for Mind Rot, so why not exile them instead? But I wonder.
Or maybe Dose of Dawnglow is broken, and they needed to nerf it.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's probably only your graveyard, not every graveyard. Yeah, it's only your graveyard. Never mind.
I wonder. I mean, especially coming off the heels of a few sets now where there wasn't like a double Raise Dead variant. Like, I wonder if we're back to that territory, which would make sense for the exile on Perfect Intimidation.
This message is sponsored by Raycon. Now that the holidays are over, it's the perfect time to upgrade your gear for the new year. If you're getting back into a fitness routine, audio that actually works while you move makes a huge difference.
I took 2 weeks off from the gym with the holidays, and I have been paying the price. Yesterday was my first day back, please clap. And the two things I grab when I go are my water bottle and my Raycon Essential Open Earbuds. They don't block out everything like traditional earbuds, so I can still hear what's going on around me, which is huge for safety and focus. Or just hearing Jonah cry out from his room when I'm listening to a podcast.
Raycon has over 3 million customers, and the sound quality is just as good as the way more expensive brands. They're half the price because they're not paying for celebrity endorsements and all that retail markup stuff. Plus, these earbuds are ultra lightweight, have multi-point connectivity, and 36 hours of battery life. And if you don't like them, they have a 30-day guarantee.
The Essential Open Earbuds are here to help you crush your new year goals. Go to buyraycon.com/lolopen to get 20% off site-wide. Thanks, Raycon, for sponsoring.
Some other cool rares to check out. Bitterbloom Bearer. I mean, despite neither of us playing Lorwyn, Bitter Blossom is an iconic magic card that both of us love from cubes. We've got Bitterbloom Bearer here. This is a mythic rare. Black for a 1/1 fairy rogue with flash flying. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose a life and create a 1/1 blue and black fairy creature token with flying. Card is excellent. Like, if we're doing letter grades, this is at least a B+.
I don't know if it is. So I want to say... But Bitter Blossom is washed, right?
No, I am not here for that take. Bitter Blossom is so good. Like, I would give it slightly washed in Vintage Cube.
But also, this is a creature. It's not an enchantment. It dies to a sneeze, and it's black to cast.
This is like Orcish Bowmasters. Your 2-drop that you play on your opponent's end step immediately gives you another 1/1 flyer, and then your opponent has to spend their next turn killing it, and you're still left with a 1/1 flyer. At the end of the deal, this is
what if I have
Lingering Souls Plus? This card is great. I mean, it's not Lingering Souls Plus. Souls is a better limited Magic the Gathering card than this, but it's closer to that than not.
That's what I'm hearing. That's why I'm moving on. Next up, we have Aschling's Command, which is 3 blue red for a kindred instant. Okay, so is that the word?
Kindred instead of Titanfall. Okay, there we go.
Kindred. Okay, 3 blue red for a kindred instant elemental. Choose 2. Create a token that's a copy of target elemental you control. Target player draws 2 cards. Ashling's command deals 2 damage to each creature target player controls. Target player creates 2 treasure tokens. I'm here for that. I love new commands.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is very reminiscent of Lorehold command, like same casting cost, similarly powerful. Also, a look into the fact that probably each color combination is going to have a creature type associated with it, and it looks like blue red is probably elementals.
I would imagine it's largely a throwback to original Lorwyn with like elementals and fairies and merfolk.
Kithkin.
And that's why changelings is here. Kithkin for that's the Slesnia one.
Is Lorwyn where that's not where it's not mercenaries. What are the things that can search each other up? Rebels. It's not where rebels was it?
Rebels.
Because it was all like
that's like nemesis creatures, and Mercadian masks. Yeah.
Next up, we've got High Perfect Morkant. This is 2 black green for a legendary elf noble at rare. It's a 4/4, and when it or another elf you control enters, each opponent blights 1, and you can tap 3 untapped elves you control to proliferate, activate only as a sorcery. So also looking like black green, probably elves.
Whenever it or another elf you control enters, each opponent blights 1. I was like, why do I want to?
This was the card that blights your opponent's creatures.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's really sick. And then lastly, we've got Kirol Attentive First Year, which is 1 Boros Boros for a 3/3 legendary vampire cleric. Tap 2 untapped creatures you control. Copy target triggered ability you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Activate only once each turn.
It's pretty cool. I mean, triggered abilities, there's some busted ones. I can't imagine it's going to be good game in and game out or deck in and deck out. But if you have a deck where that pops off, that'd be pretty fun.
I would imagine then there's got to be some sort of like, I don't think they'll bring back like things that care about you having tapped creatures, but I would assume that Boros is going to have tokens, so this will be easier. You're not having to actually tap 2 whole creatures, but it's also a little weird. I feel like I always get got by this because I'm like, is there tension here with like Boros wants to attack, but then are you trying to...
Boros control, baby. Boros control.
Look, say less, please. You know, I love me a Boros control deck. But I also wonder if this, like, is this just what this rare does versus this being emblematic of what Boros does? We don't know yet.
Correct. Yeah, that seems more like just what that rare does.
Well, I'm excited. We're going to have a huge influx of previews. And so am I right that next week is Crash Course? So we're just going
Crash Course, yeah. There is no more preview chat. We thought this was going to be the previews episode because that was the schedule, but we didn't account for them just saying, no, we're not doing anything over the holidays.
Okay, shall we chat some limited resolutions for 2026?
Absolutely, yeah.
I put together a list of a top 8. I love a good, nice round number. Some of them I'm going to really take to heart, or I'm going to try to take to heart. And some of them are things that I think our listeners should take to heart.
Okay, love it.
So my number 1 resolution, and I would say this is more for our listeners than for me, is play more best of 3. And my like sort of pitch for this, or my caveat for this is I know like number go up for your rank is very exciting. Better competition with your rank in terms of who you're playing against. But if competition is important to you, which is like the argument I hear is like, I want to play against good competition. If you want to be competitive, best of 3 is how Magic is played at high stakes competitive levels. And like sideboarding is such a huge tool for those games and gives you such an edge. And I think there's like 2 sort of sub resolutions here, which is if this is important to you, if competitive play is important to you, play more sealed, and that's going to get you, and not best of 1 sealed, good lord, play more best of 3 sealed, and play single limbs on Magic Online. I was just listening to, I was catching up on Sam's podcast, Rough Drafts, and listening to Ryan Condon on there talking about prep for Worlds, and I got to work with Ryan prepping for Arena Champs 5, and you know, the single limb drafts on Magic Online are awesome. And if you can find that sweet spot couple weeks leading up to a Pro Tour or Worlds where they're firing more often, and they're really hard drafts and they're higher stakes, they're a higher entry fee. But if that's important to you, I would recommend leaning into that. And I think that is like just best of 3 Magic it's better. I'm just going to say it. It's just better. And it's not my opinion. I think it is just better.
It is definitely better. I mean, in defense of best of 1, it is very nice to be able to play Magic and be thoughtless and be watching a TV show while you're playing on your phone. And best of 3
for
is
sure.
Signing up for a larger chunk of time frame. And it's wild how far we've come in Magic, right? Like came from Magic Online, just I can draft online. This is amazing. Let me block out a 3-hour chunk of time so that I can do an entire pod draft on Magic Online. And let me try to draft an aggro deck so that I can do my laundry in between rounds. Or no, I want this to be solely dedicated to Magic. Let me draft a control deck and make sure I am the last person done with every round. To, okay, leagues are great. Best of three leagues. To, okay, best of one leagues. Give me more Magic faster. I mean, there's stuff to be said for best of one. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I agree with this point that if you want to get better, you should be playing more best of three. Sideboarding is just where it's at.
It really is. Like, it's just such an it's such an underappreciated limited tool, and it is the most, I think, as a result, it is the most confounding part of Constructed to me. Like, that is one of the biggest, and not to say that I have any grasp of anything in Constructed, but, like, gameplay, deck construction, I feel like I largely get. But when it comes to sideboarding, I'm like, okay, maybe I sort of see what cards are supposed to come in. Like, oh, you're using the graveyard, so I'll bring in my Soul Guide Lanterns, but then what do I cut? Like, what is the expendable part of this deck?
Like a game of chicken or something with the transformative sideboards, right? Like, okay, I know my opponent's going to transform into this deck, so I should pull in these cards, but what if they decide they know that I know that, so they don't pull in those cards, and then I pull in these cards? Like, that just feels like guessing to me, which is no thank you.
Yeah, there was, I remember that game of chicken when I was playing a lot of Pioneer with, like, playing Arclight Phoenix. You'd be like, okay, I know you're bringing in all your graveyard hate, so I'm going to cut my Phoenixes. And then it's like, well, but if they know that, do they just then not bring in their ley lines? And then you're stuck without your Arclight Phoenixes. And yeah, you're right. The game of chicken is also tough.
For me, I think the way this applies is I need to think more about sideboarding on the play or the draw. In best of three, like sideboarding play draw dependent in games 2 and 3.
Okay, number two, and I don't feel strongly about this necessarily, but I wanted to throw it out here. And I said, move off your first pick more. And I don't know if this is for me or for our listeners. It's definitely not for me. Maybe I need to stay with my first pick more. But I feel like there's, in the era of play boosters, I feel like time and time again, we have come to the conclusion that signal reading is really important. There have been sunsets where you're like, nah, I'm going to really like hold on to this for dear life. Maybe Edge of Eternities felt like that, where there were like big power level gaps and like the commons were junk. In the sets where the commons aren't junk, I think you need to read signals like really well. And that's going to put you in a better position than holding on to whatever B plus card you start your draft with.
I'm going to push back on this one. This is almost directly opposite to one of mine, which is number 5 on my list, which is don't get fancy draft syndrome. And I think there was a point in time when we first started this podcast and pre then, right? And maybe we were just worse at drafting then, or maybe I was worse at drafting then, or wanted to feel smart or X, Y, and Z. But I think there was a period of time where I was like, yes, I'm going to scrap my first 4 to 5 picks, draft this build around uncommon, like this is clearly open, and I'm going to draft this totally new deck that is around this build around uncommon that was a signal, no. And I don't think that's a thing anymore. I don't think you're supposed to do that in limited, but maybe I've just gotten too LSV-pilled where he like takes his first card and is building with his first card.
That's cube. I know, man. That's not...
I'm with you.
Yeah.
But I think... My best decks, your best decks are decks where you don't have to move off your first pick, like where you stay with your first pick and that's flowing and you get to do the thing from the beginning. And the drafts where you have to like bump and grind and elbow people out of the way to find your archetype and then move in. I would say there's times when you end up with the nuts, like from doing it the right way that you're talking about. But I would say more often than not, you end up with like a deck that just isn't as good as if your lane was open from the get-go. So like for me, it's almost don't get cute. Like if you can draft the thing from where you started, you probably should.
Because my argument to you is about to be like, yeah, but you're like, well, the best drafts are when blah. Your worst drafts are the drafts where you don't take the pick 5 signpost.
I agree.
And that is open. Like those are the worst ones. And I want to avoid those drafts as well.
I agree. Like I just experienced that in the Midnight Hunt draft that I did a few days ago. I was like, all right, blue black's great. I pack one, picked one, Organ Hoarder. And I was like, all right, I'm going to draft blue black. I think it's probably forcible. And so I was doing that. And there was like a pack one, pick four or five. It's like Rise of the Ants or something. It's like four green, green. You make some ant tokens. It's got flashback. Mm. It's a very powerful green uncommon. And I hadn't seen much green before that. And I was like, this is pretty late. And there was another good card. And I probably should take this and either like pivot to blue green or whatever. But I didn't really remember how blue green worked. So I let it go by, and then clear shot goes by, and then another clear shot goes by, and I was like, all right, I should have moved into green, and I barely made playables in my blue-black deck. So I hear that for sure.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's a clear, like, move off your first pick more, stick with your first pick more, but I just want to be more thoughtful about that. And maybe it's set-to-set dependent in terms of those tiers. Like, I'm thinking about, like, the power level gaps that we've experienced. I don't know. But there's something there to
sure.
Think
and
about.
I certainly think the better the people you're drafting with or the more competitive the pod, the more I am almost wanting to do that. But at the same time, you see how fast the packs dry up in those Worlds drafts. I don't know. I think yes. To really have an informed opinion on this for competitive play, we would just need to do competitive in pod drafts more. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we right. would. Yeah. Be able to say more clearly which side of the fence you should land on. Because league play is so variant.
Yes. I guess if we're talking about that, I feel like in more competitive pods, I feel like I want to be less inclined to move off my first pick because like power dries up so quickly. But I feel like in weaker pods, I want to read signals more.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Okay. Number three. This is definitely for me. No more snap keeps. I think I should be mulliganing more in 2026. I'm not trying to start every game with six cards or anything, but I think I am too heuristic pilled of like three lands, four spells, keep or whatever, and not really stopping to just think. And a lot of these points are going to be about stopping to think, but just stopping to think about, okay, how does this hand play out? How does this hand play out? If I'm on the play or on the draw, or like if I anticipate they have a two drop or they have a removal spell, whatever. I'm not trying to over mulligan, but like I try and snap keep a lot, and I'm gonna not do that in 2026.
That's one of mine as well. One of mine is to mulligan more. I think your hands just have to do things in Magic these days. Like I'm really guilty of keeping a hand that is like three lands, four spells, or four lands, three spells, but like I'm on the play and I've got like a creature and then two or three interactive spells. And like the question you posed of like, how does this hand play out?
Yeah.
And oftentimes I do ask myself that question. I'm like, well, I can't really pressure my opponent, which isn't great on the play. And then you're down a card because you're like, they're getting the draw. And I'm like, I don't think this hand's going to win. And then like, oftentimes that's true. Like the hand bears itself out and like is kind of awkward and they kill your creature and you have some removal and they like, I've played enough Magic to know how that I've seen that movie before.
Right.
And I still keep the hand instead of mulliganing for a six that might have a more functional game plan. Like I think hands need to have a thing that they are doing or have. I'm also guilty about keeping hands that are like have a lot of the 17th through 23rd cards in my deck.
Ooh,
and lands that are functional. And like, I think that's a pretty bad spot to be in. Most of the time in limited these days.
I think that's a good shout. Yeah. I just want like, you got time to look at your opening hand. I just want to take that time. Number four, this is going to be really hard. No more plus life EV concessions. So there are a few things here. And what I mean by this for folks who like, don't know the deep recesses of our Twitch streaming lore is that, like, I don't like to play the games where I have 10%, 5% to win.
It's just not fun.
I'm just like, it's really, I physically recoil at that, like sitting in that discomfort because I'm like, I'm very unlikely to win. Why do I need to sit in this discomfort? It's not fun. And I think certainly at least leading up to Arena Champs, I just got to stop doing that. I was watching Arna Hushenbeth is one of my like favorite YouTubers and he does only constructed stuff, but he's just really good at explaining his lines of play. And I was watching a game he was playing, and he could have randomly, he was so far ahead, he could have randomly clicked buttons and won the game. And I was getting frustrated watching him because he was like tanking on this turn when I was like, just do anything and win. And as he was like talking through his thought process and then got to sideboarding and he was like, what if that was a game where they were actually in it and I had that situation? I would want to know like what I was at, like what's the best way to use my mana and my spells. And I was like, man, I never do that. Which brings me on to point number five, which is review more games. I was watching Andre Strosky stream a standard challenge the other day. He lost match one. He immediately pulled up his Twitch VOD, like rewound to that game and started reviewing the game. I was like, dang.
And did he find things that he could have done differently?
No, but like it was stuff that, like I part of it was things that I, and maybe this is a constructed bent, I don't like to be results oriented with, like, I think that's sort of a general magic thing is like, don't be results oriented of like, okay, your opponent did this thing. Should you have done anything different? And I'm like, well, I didn't know they were going to do that thing. I tried to make the
play with the information you had. Yeah.
Decision I could. But I think there is benefit to be like, okay, they did have that.
Could I have done anything?
If I had done the best thing in opposition of that, would that have been right? Like, would that have worked out well for me? Whatever. And he was just like, and it felt like games where they were pretty straightforward. And he was still like, just staring at the board. Is there anything else I could have done? What if I had done this? What if I had done this? And I don't do that. And I am also very much like, I feel like if I review games, it has to be, I have to have distance from it. I always say that like when I was doing coaching, I'd be like, take a few days, then go back. Because I feel like if you do it right after, you'll just make the same decisions you did, or you'll justify the decisions you made. And if you put distance between it, then you'll maybe have a different perspective. But maybe that's not true. And maybe if you just use it as a thought exercise of like, just explore everything. What are all the possibilities you could make? Then you could review immediately and do it. And I just don't review nearly enough games. Yep. Number six, no more lazy gameplay. I get into the habit of if my opponent's tapped out, then I'm just gonna, whatever, I'll do stuff in main phase one and then attack.
Heck yeah, you will. Amen, baby.
Nah, I gotta stop doing it. I have to really consider instance decisions. Like if they're tapped out, do I use my removal now? Do I use my removal in their upkeep? Do I use it at the beginning of combat? Do I use it in combat? Like, I feel like I guess a lot of the time about those things, or like make the, well, I want to kill that thing, so I'll just kill it right now. That's the easiest decision to make. But I don't often think through them. And this is a sort of like three points in a row that are just like, just take your time, just think through things. But in different facets.
Yeah, I have a very similar one on my list, which is plan out your entire turn before taking actions. I remember reading a PVDDR article back in the day where he talked about that, like sequencing your turn and front loading the thinking and then playing quickly once you've front loaded the thought process. And I think where I actually weirdly get myself in trouble sometimes is I'm so used to doing everything in main phase one. And then when I play games that matter to me, I try to do it right and play things in main phase two. And sometimes it's right to play things in main phase one where I'm like, I go into this thing where like almost all of my mistakes in Magic are I assume something is true and my assumption is not true. Like that is the base result of all of my mistakes in Magic. And when I play competitive matches or matches that I really want to win, I'm like, all right, I'm going to lock in and I'm going to do things right. And I'm going to play things in main phase two. And I'm going to attack first before I've done it. And then sometimes that heuristic is wrong and I needed to break that and actually do stuff before attacking like I normally would when I'm playing sloppy, like just like cast my card draw spell to see if that changes my attacks or whatever later in the turn. And oftentimes I'll just reflexively, okay, I'm going to attack and then I'm going to do my stuff in main phase two rather than giving thought to should it be in main phase one or should it be in main phase two and just actually front loading the thinking for the turn before I take game actions.
Yeah, I think there's also a, like, you get to main phase one, you're like, I got some options. Well, I know I'm going to attack first. So then I go to attack and I'm like, dang it, I should have done this already. Yeah.
And just think more.
Number seven, and I don't think I do this, but I think people do this, divorce self-worth and progress as a player from winning. So divorce self-worth from winning is just a good mental health move that I certainly have, I feel like I've done. The divorce progress as a player from winning, I think, is going to be extremely important for me in my journey towards this arena championships. I was reflecting on the last, like when I was testing last time for the PT and arena champs, and I think I was just way too concerned with like winning. Like I wanted to just win matches. And that doesn't do anything. Like winning, I mean, it feels good, and play and getting reps teaches you stuff. But having a winning record doesn't actually like mean you're learning stuff, and or it doesn't take away from like losing is also valuable. And I feel like this time around I'd like care much less about like whatever, making sure I'm winning with stuff. And like, I just want to like see the matrix. I want to like make sure I know like how decks match up against each other. What are sideboard plans? What are blah, blah, blah. And if that means like, if that means I'm doing a lot of losing as I'm learning that stuff, so sure. Be it.
Yeah.
That's my take.
A very healthy attitude.
And my last resolution, and I think there people can do one of two things. For me, I am going to watch more and play less. But I think there are people out there who need to watch less and play more if they want to get better. I feel like this is easier for me with Constructed because I feel like I have so much to learn. And I'm excited and eager to watch people play Standard right now. I feel less of that with Limited because of what you said about like, it's hard to watch a draft where you don't agree with the first few picks because like you kind of want to play along, but there are going to be like, there are definitely players out there that I know are better than me, that I respect, that I enjoy watching, that are going to make different picks than I will. And rather than, I feel like I take that as an affront to myself, or like, okay, well, I need to be defensive about this because I would have done something different. So they're wrong and I'm right. And I don't think draft is like that. I think there are different paths you can take through drafts some of the time. And I just think I'm going to take some of my hunger for Constructed content and bring that to Limited content. And I'm going to watch more and play less in 2026.
Interesting. I like it. I think for me, if to transition to my list of if I wanted to get better, but probably won't do these things, nervous sweating emoji. I like the twist on that point for me, this is not on my list, but it would be to be more mindful while I'm playing, like to not play. Like if I really were trying to get better, I would need to play and not stream and like actually think. And that is kind of one of mine. Or I would need to play and not also be watching Twitch while I'm playing, or play and not also have a YouTube video playing while I'm playing. Like I'm so used to, I want maximum magic stimulation when I'm playing magic. Like the things you're talking about, like of like actually thinking when your opponent's taking their turn instead of being like, okay, I want to do my stuff. Can we move the game along? Like,
yeah,
that sort of stuff.
It's so interesting. I'm trying to think like, when was the last time I just played Magic? I mean, I guess in paper, I just play Magic, but I don't do that very often. But like otherwise, it's like if I'm playing, I'm either streaming, making something for YouTube, or I have Twitch on the other monitor, or I'm playing on my phone and watching TV. Like I'm never just
playing Magic. Yeah.
Magic. So maybe that's a good one. Maybe my number nine resolution is just play magic
and don't do anything else and try to critically think about the magic you're playing. So here's my list of if I wanted to get better, what I would do. So we already hit number one, plan out the entire turn before taking actions. We talked about mulliganing more. Number three, I would need to, I think, check 17 lands. I said it. I'm being honest here. Check 17 lands and check in with friends in the first 1 to 5 days of a format, instead of trying to figure things out in a vacuum. But I like trying to figure things out in a vacuum. I know I would be even better at figuring it out if I looked at 17 lands and if I checked in with friends and had those conversations. And maybe I should for the podcast, because I think the podcast would probably be better if I had more information. But I really enjoy the puzzle of cutting myself off from the internet and thinking really hard about what I think about it, because I think that brings a unique perspective to the podcast also, where sometimes we're wrong. Like that was, I did read that Reddit thread of like what Lords of Valors, Lords of Limited.
I can't open
somebody
this,
linked it,
think.
And I did read it, and there was lots, it was whatever, it was the usual Reddit, tons of feelings about us, like people championing us, people saying we're hot garbage, whatever. It was the whole spectrum. Yeah. But I think one thing stuck with me, which was somebody was talking about like our snowmelt stag tangent, and they were like, I lost a lot of gems because of these guys. Like, I drafted snowmelt stag, and I was like, I hate that for that person. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I do. I'm never. We're not trying to like bait and hook people into. We're not paid by Watsy to make you lose gems. Like, I'm always trying to bring the best information I can to the podcast. You know. But I read that comment. Sure. I was like, that sucks. Like, I'd feel really bad as a teacher if I told my student something that was wrong on their instrument. You know what I mean? Like, I feel an obligation as a teacher, and I feel like we're kind of in that role in this podcast. I've got some reflecting to do on that. Like, that specific thing got me thinking about, should I care less about this? Because I also feel like my stance on that sets our podcast. There was stuff about us being too countercultury to have actionable advice. And I think that's a fair criticism. But then there were other people who were like, no, you don't get it. They're assuming their audience knows all these baseline things about the format already and are like, that's their target audience. And I think that is true. But is our audience big enough that we owe more about establishing the established baseline before hopping into all of the other stuff that you can do? And it got me reflecting. So
have you ever done this? Like, in the era of 17 lines, have you checked it more in week one? And
I always get my thoughts before the first episode. And then after I've put my thoughts on paper, then I'll go look at what 17 lands is saying so that I'm informed in that regard as well. But I never look at it while I'm trying to form my own thoughts about the format, because I don't want the noise pollution.
And that's because you think, I think you should try it for one set.
It can't hurt. One set. Yeah. Yeah.
You should try it.
I'm certain it would be helpful.
Selfishly, I would just like, I would love to get you chirping in my ear on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of the, you know, first.
But some of that is for content's sake as well, right? Because I think the show is better when you and I haven't talked prior to the show about the format. Or is that not true? You think that's...
I think it's true, but it's all... I'm also like, we have no... You put microphones in front of us and get us to talk about Magic, and we're not going to have any trouble filling the time or arguing. So, like, I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
It might be slightly different, but... It might be better.
It might be more actionable. That's what those two things, like the person talking about their snowmelt stag gems, I was like, I hate that for you, and I feel responsible, and I'm sorry. I wish I could reach out to that person, but I don't know how to comment on Reddit posts and will not be making a Reddit account.
Sure.
And so if you're listening, sorry. And two, the thing about us being too counterculture to have actionable advice in the first week of a format, that got me thinking. Like, I think that's a fair criticism of our show. I think I a lot of times assume that when we're giving counterculture advice, people already know how to do the baseline thing, or it's so commonly accepted that we don't need to lay out the baseline.
Right. Well, that's because I feel like if we try and do that, we kind of lose. I don't know what our show is bringing that week, because that feels like that exists.
Sure.
You know, like, if you want to know, like, what is the best thing to do according to 17 lands game and hand win rate, you can look at that. Or there are other outlets that will teach you how to do
that. Sure. But I'm not saying, I hear that. But I'm not saying, I think Alex, for example, does a really good job of this on limited level ups. Like, Alex is at a very nice medium between where LR is and where we are. Like, I think Alex does a great job of establishing baselines for the format, and then also going beyond those baselines of, okay, like, here's how to win, like, here's what's good. Now that you know that, maybe think about these three or four or five things to, like, take you the next step into the format or whatever. And I think maybe we could shift, like, whatever. So LR is driving 25 miles an hour. You and I are driving 80 miles an hour in week one of the format. And I think limited level ups is driving like 55 miles an hour. And maybe we could slow down and drive the speed limit at 70 miles per hour in week one of the format and maybe have more actionable advice. And I'm not saying we will or whatever, but it just got me reflective reading that stuff and thinking about it.
Great. Yeah, I like it.
And number four, this is one that I will try to do. I don't know how good I will be at it, but it's not tilt when things don't go my way early in a format. And I think this has happened enough now that it is a pattern and I would like to break the cycle, which is you get unlucky sometimes at the start of a format. Like sometimes you win with a deck that is not a good archetype, but you had a very good version of it, or you had a couple juiced rares and you do those rares more and then that archetype isn't good, or you think something is true about the format isn't, and it's easy to, while you're doing that, play against good rares from the opponent and just lose. And it's really hard. It is difficult to figure out what's going wrong when you are losing. And I think those are especially the times where I need to check 17 lands and check in with friends when I start off on losing streaks. But what I've found is in those instances, like that happened to me in Avatar, where I was getting unlucky, but I was also not drafting the format correctly. And I think there's always some element of, if you're losing a bunch, it's not just you getting unlucky. Like you're probably also not viewing the format quite right, or doing, like you're not steering into the best archetypes consistently enough, or XYZ. And so my tendency is to be early in a format very entitled. Like I studied this format. I'm good at Magic. I have a limited podcast. I should be winning. And I am still trying to figure it out, but I have other options available to me to figure it out. And I need to be more reflective and try to not blame rares early in a format. And while it could simultaneously still be happening, like I could still be playing against a lot of good rares and losing to them, but not focus on that part of it.
It's really hard to distill like what, because there's also versions where it's like, no, I am like, I don't know. I guess you're not really ever just getting unlucky.
Sometimes you are. Sometimes you're just getting unlucky. You're running bad. You get stuck on two land. You play against a good rare. It's really easy in best of one to have a good deck. One round you play against a good rare that's unbeatable. The next round you get stuck on two lands. Mm-hmm. And the third one, you make a gameplay mistake. And then you're out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
And then then sometimes you steer away from that archetype as a result. And you should be leaning. That really was a good archetype. And you need to go circle back there. It's just tough. There's a lot of ways it can go wrong. But I got to stop tilting early in a format.
Okay.
Next ones are ones that I always say that I need to do, that I should do. And I think other people should too, if they're trying to get better or trying to get to this limited champs thing or whatever. Number six is practicing drafting and sealed in paper before traveling for Magic Fest that I'm going to PTQ at. Like I am so bad in paper, like at managing the cognitive load of making the game engine happen myself instead of Arena doing it for me. So I absolutely should be doing that. And I would say more people probably should be doing that, especially if you're an online only player. Like, not that I'm the smartest cookie in the room by any stretch, but I'm pretty smart. And it's really hard for me to do, like to manage the cognitive load.
Yeah.
And number seven, this is going along what you were talking about with Arena, but I think this is truly the way that I could get the best as a player, which is practice actively tracking the board state on Arena. Like try to make it like I'm playing in paper when I'm playing on Arena instead of playing on autopilot and just letting the game engine do everything. Like think, okay, I'm going to play this. This is going to trigger. Okay, I'm going to do this with that trigger rather than, and I know all the things are going to happen, but on Arena, I just play it. It pops up. Like I don't try to manage the cognitive load of the game engine at all when I'm playing Arena. I think if I started trying to do that and being more mentally present when I played Magic, that's where I would really start to get better, I think.
Yeah.
And I will try to do this despite saying I'm not really going to try to get that much better, which is I want to give my best attempts at getting into the limited championship. And I don't know what that's going to look like for me, like if the qualifying days are one day only and I've got banned those days. But if I've got shots, I'm going to try my hardest. It sounds fun and I would like to try to do it. Well, and I think to be clear, because I feel like I sound kind of grinchy or I don't know, I feel like I come off a certain way when I say, well, if I wanted to get better, like arrogant almost. And it's not that. It's that. That's what I just wanted to shout is that, like, I've spent a lot of my life trying to get good at things. And I have a lot of different hobbies, and I know how the process from you're first getting into it to getting good, like, and how much progress you make, and then trying to get from good to great, and how hard, like how small that window is, and how much more effort, like exponential more effort, has to go into each percentage point better that you get. And like going from great to excellent is so much effort for so little gain. And like, I feel like I'm somewhere in the good to great range at Magic, and I'm happy with where I am, and I don't want to put forth the effort that I know it's going to take to get those last 2 to 5 percentage points or whatever. So that's more what it is. It's just trying to be realistic about it. And I don't want to come off as cavalier about I'm great at Magic and I don't need to improve. It's just, I know how hard it's going to be, and I don't have that bandwidth to devote to it.
Well, and the other thing I'll say before we wrap up is that none of these things are fun, at least
correct,
to me.
Yeah.
Like playing Magic, yes, is fun. Reviewing my games, not as fun. Watching instead of playing, not as fun. Like taking time and not, or sitting in the 10% to win games, not fun. Like, so that's my resistance to these, is like, this is, yes, it's work, it's whatever, it's a huge part of my life, but at the end of the day, this is a hobby for me, and I would like it to be enjoyable, and I'm scared slightly of sucking out some of that enjoyment to make
correct
it harder.
That's more where I'm at. Like, this is more similar to when we very first started the podcast and very first started streaming, and not podcast so much. Like, I was very committed to doing that every week once we started, but streaming, like, I never wanted to feel obligated to stream because I love playing Magic and I didn't want to kill that. And I think I've been very successful with that. Like, I only stream when I want to stream, and I only play Magic when I want to play Magic, and I want to play Magic a lot. So that hasn't been a problem. Like, play plenty of Magic, but like these resolutions, I think if I were like, I got to get better at Magic and I didn't stream and I thought really hard about the games of Magic, like, first of all, I just don't have the mental bandwidth, but I think it would also start to kill it for me a little bit. And I don't want that.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a tough balance. You can find our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our tier lists, our Patreon page, our Twitch streams, respectively, our YouTube channel, our episode backlogs, of course, all of that available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.